All right, let's talk a little bit about WACI. As a program director, did you pay much attention to them, or were you concentrating more on what you were trying to do right at KLO?
When I first got there, I listened to them and I tried to analyze them, and they were the more old-fashioned. This was 1964, and radio was about to change. Let me back up and say that I had been very fortunate in the early 60s, before 64, to work at WOKY in Milwaukee, which was programmed by a fellow named Chris Lane, who had set up KYA in San Francisco, a Bartell station, as was WOKY. And Chris Lane came up with a very tight, uncluttered, jingle-free, hard-driving format. They perfected it at KYA, we did it at WOKY, and then that's what I instilled into WKLO. About that same time, another fellow who had worked at KYA, who was a disciple of Chris Lane, went to Southern California and started programming in Southern California. His name was Bill Drake. So Bill and I both came out of Chris Lane. Bill became famous on the West Coast and actually finally all across the country with a very tight, uncluttered format. We were doing the same thing, not the Drake format, but the same thing coming from the same teacher, Chris Lane. When I got to Louisville, I was listening to WACI, and they were the old-fashioned. That was the standard then, what later became the old-fashioned way of doing Top 40. We in 1964 were doing something that was sort of unheard of at the time that became later the standard of Top 40. Did any of that make sense?
Yes, it did. And it's funny because later on, some of the air checks I've heard of WKLO, they went to the Drake format and had the Drake jingles and the Drake news open and everything.
And they got their butt kicked. Johnny Randolph was then the program director at WACI, and he realized that in order for the station to really be good, it had to really communicate and touch the community. And when WKLO was doing that old Drake format, they were. Bernie Gudridge, the general manager, called me and asked me to come down for a couple of days and listen. I went into his office and said, well, the good news is that your station sounds a whole bunch better than theirs does. Your format is clean. You do this better. You do this better. You do this better. The bad news is they are touching the community and you're not. You're sterile clean. Listening to your station is like sitting in an operating room antiseptically clean. Listening to their station is like sitting in a den with your feet propped up on the coffee table eating an apple. And that was the difference between those two. KLO went to that antiseptic clean format, and WACI was a good listenable format.
Did KLO change based upon your recommendations?
No, I don't think they did. I just gave him my input, and he took me out to dinner, and I left. WACI had been a very good radio station. They were owned by McClendon. Hal Smith, a fellow I worked with in Louisville at WKLO, was one of the first jocks at WACI. He later had a great career with Metro Media. But they really got waylaid with that problem with Jack Sanders. Then they, I think, didn't realize that they were vulnerable. And they stayed with old-fashioned radio when we modernized in 1964, 65 in those days. There was some comment that our people went to them, but their people didn't come to us. We wouldn't hire anybody from WACI. And when people would leave us, they would end up at WACI. So they ended up with the people who we, for some reason, were parting company with, and we knew their weaknesses. And that was one of the reasons we would never hire anybody from WACI. We didn't want to hire somebody who they knew, you know, our weaknesses. It was an interesting radio battle, and WKLO was a great radio station for maybe 4 or 5 years. And then WACI was a great station before, and I think they were a great station later. When we turned on WKLO in 1964, the fall of 64, nobody even paid any attention to us, I don't think. We got by with a lot of stuff that we couldn't have later because we were low profile, and they just ignored us. And we caught up with them, and as I mentioned, in January of 65, we beat them by a tenth of a point, and then we went on from there. At one time, Bailey was first, and then the Midday guys. I was the last one to be a member of the 40 Club, we called it. A jock to have a 40 share on the radio station. We had ratings that were just unbelievable. I left in 68 and went to New York. Wigglesworth became the program director, and he is a dear, dear friend. Randolph came over to WACI at that point. He knew what WKLO was doing, and Wigglesworth at that point was going through a period where people needed their freedom, so he relaxed the restrictions of the format, and that's when KLO got clobbered. And then Hennis came in as program director, and he put in a format that was entirely too cold and rigid. It was beautiful, but it was cold and rigid. And Wacky was blowing real life into their sound. They had old WKLO personalities, and, you know, Bailey, and they had good personalities, and then they became the dominant station for several years after that.
All right, when did you leave WKLO?
I left in early 1968, probably February of 1968. I would have stayed there forever, I'm sure. I had a number of opportunities to go elsewhere. Had an opportunity to go to WNBC New York. I don't remember when it was, probably 66 or 67. WKLO was hot, and people came from all over the country to monitor the station, and NBC offered me a job. But if I had worked at WNBC, I would not have been in control of news, only the music, and even then, not as much as I should have, so I turned that down. In retrospect, I wish I had taken it, only simply because my son later was program director of WNBC. I think that would have been a neat thing. I was recruited, finally, in 1968 by a headhunter to go to be a national program director of a chain of radio stations. In those days, there were not many chains with national program directors, and I think I had 8 radio stations, from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, to Phoenix, Arizona, which made me a big program director with 8 radio stations. Now you have that many in one town. So I took that job as national program director of Southern Broadcasting. It was not the smartest thing I ever did in my life.
Why is that?
Actually, that probably wasn't so dumb. The dumb thing was that I left the job in less than a year to go be program director of WMCA in New York City. That was not the smartest thing I ever did.
Then why is that?
That station was owned by a man named Peter Strauss. And we had the same success at WMCA as we had had at WKLO, with essentially the same format. And with a couple of the KLO disc jockeys, Chuck Browning and Lee Gray were there, along with Murray the K and all the other disc jockeys who were in New York at the time at that station. And we had great success, but the owner of the station, Peter Strauss, had been in the Johnson administration as an assistant secretary of state. And had Hubert Humphrey been elected president in 1968 or 1969, Peter Strauss would have become secretary of state and would have stayed in Washington. But Nixon was elected, and so Peter came back to New York, decided he wanted to make WMCA a station for the people. He did not have confidence in Top 40. We were, by this time, beating WABC for the first time ever, with that same clean, uncluttered sound that we had put in at WKLO up against WABC New York, and we were winning. And Peter changed the format to half two-way talk and half music, and it was a terrible thing to do. So I was at WMCA for a year or so and then left.
And what'd you do after that?
Well, I eventually went into management. I went back to Great Trails as general manager of their station in Milwaukee, and I was there for about 4 years. We became number one there, and then I went into ownership out in Wyoming and kicked around with management and in different parts of the country. In my 50 years of radio, I tell people I worked in New York City and on Maui and in about 20 states in between.
And when did you retire?
4 years ago.
And you are where?
I live in Van Buren, Arkansas. I grew up in Fort Smith, just across the river. We retired to live in Sonora, California, and in the Sierra Nevadas. But my mother, who is 92, has Alzheimer's, so we had to move back to this part of the country to be closer to her.
Do you miss radio today?
No, not at all. I was in it at the good time, and really don't miss it. I've done a little radio since I retired. I've done 2 short interim jobs for people who were in between managers, and one station was being sold, and they just needed somebody for about 3 months, and I went in. But I don't miss it at all. Radio is fine for people who are young in it today, but those of us who were in radio when radio changed the first time, probably, I don't really particularly care for what they're doing today.
All right, you were in radio for an awful long time. How does WKLO and your time there in Louisville rate with the rest of your broadcast career? Is it a highlight or just a nice stepping stone?
WKLO was one of the highlights. Number one, it was my first honest-to-goodness program director's job. And Ernie Gutteridge was a fabulous general manager. He was the guy who was the quiet guy behind the scenes that most people who think of KLO never think of Ernie, but he was the guy who made it all possible to happen. He allowed me freedom that most general managers wouldn't allow, and yet at the same time, he was there to give me great sage advice when I needed it. We had great personalities. We had Bill Bailey and Chuck Browning and Lee Gray and Jack Shorey, just on and on and on. Carl Truman Wigglesworth, just wonderful personalities and great success. So that would have to be the highlight of my program directing career.
Was it a hard decision to take yourself off the air at KLO?
Not really. At the time, it wasn't, even though I enjoyed being on the air. I was wild on the air. I was the Mighty Mitch pitching hits with RBIs. I was a screaming, yelling, frantic fella. When I did 4 hours on the air, when I got off, I had to go into a decompression chamber almost and just come down. And that, after a full day of program directing, was a lot of work. That was like doing two jobs. Ernie was very, very astute. He recognized that, and he suggested that I go off the air. He promoted me to vice president of Air Trails in those days, and I went off the air and had a, quote, executive job, which allowed me to strictly concentrate on programming. I have never really missed anything that I did after I did it. I started out as a sports announcer, and I loved it. And I love doing news. I love doing disc jockey work. I love being a program director. I love being a general manager. Every step I have enjoyed and not really looked back. Of course, the GM was the best one, because then I could still do all of those things a little bit.
Do you think WKLO is an important part of Top 40 radio history?
It definitely was. WKLO was one of those stations that in 1964 started doing a clean, uncluttered, disciplined sound. It was one of the stations that paved the way for disciplined radio station programming. We had a format that required the disc jockeys to come out of every record with a, what we called a stab, this little jingle, Sonobox jingle. On top of that, they would repeat the call letters with, it'd say Radio WKLO time. So we had the Sonobox saying WKLO, and then the disc jockey saying Radio WKLO time. So we hit them twice with the call letters. Then we did the time and the temperature, the back announce, and a liner. And all of that was very disciplined. And then after that, the disc jockey was free to be a personality if he or she could. Bill Bailey was a very strong personality. Others who couldn't be a personality just did the time and the temperature and the back announces, did the liners, and went on to the next thing. We always had the station sounding the same, even though we had big personalities and we had no personalities, all mixed into the same radio station. We had a contest. Our news guy on Bailey's show, every morning, every newscast, he'd say, for Louisville, I have 47 degrees, and Bill Bailey with hit music. Well, he would say, for Louisville, I have such and such degrees, and Bailey would break in and talk to him for a few seconds, half a minute, and then he would say, and Bill Bailey with hit music. He never did anything other than that. We had a contest for the top two personalities. Bailey was number one. Ken Knight, the news guy, was number two. But he was thought of as a personality because he was with a personality. And the station was very innovative in that regard. It was one of the early innovators of what became a tight, disciplined format later on. I would say that WKLO had to be one of the premier top 40 radio stations in America in the mid-1960s. It spawned some great, great talent, people who went on to big markets and people who have shaped radios, you know, since then. We had great ownership and great leadership. It was a fun place to work, but it was a place to work. And that was the difference between us and a lot of radio stations. A lot of radio stations, people played. We worked, and then we played. And we were straight arrow people. We didn't have a lot of nonsense going on in the station. The owner of the radio station was Charles Sawyer, who had been Secretary of Commerce in the Truman administration. He was a straight arrow man who hired good general managers to run their radio stations as if they owned them. And all the Great Trails radio stations were professional places.